Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show that shares insights into how you can build your business once, with hosts Jerry Lowry and Jennifer Navarrete. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Jennifer Navarrete, and with me is Sherry Lowry, who is sharing her 20-plus years of knowledge on what it takes to build your business once. Now, on today's show, Sherry's going to take us along. She is the guide. She is the person that's been there before. She is going to teach us how we can map out our own high road with self-renewing stops along the way. Sherry, that just sounds like a fun journey that I want to take with you.
Okay. I tell you what, I have one to recommend where I kind of had this aha. It's a family story in a way. I had a new car. I don't get those very often. I get attached to cars, and I like to keep them. I like to have two cars, one that's my keeper car and one that's my making sure I get everywhere forever car. But I had a new car, and I had a new grandbaby in L.A., and I was scheduling a trip out to L.A. by car purposely to go out through West Texas and through New Mexico and into California. And I love the Monterey area, and that was out not quite on the journey, but I wanted to make it a part of the journey because the kids wanted the first week with the grandbaby by themselves, and then they wanted me to show up. So I had a little extra time because I didn't want to upstage, you know, their whole greeting with the new baby and taking him home from the hospital and everything. So I headed out, and I got into the Monterey area and was on Highway 1, which is historic in California to begin with, and there's a particular part of it that is rugged and mountainous and just beautiful. And it's also right above part of the valley where some really unique crops grow. And I'm also a gardener, so I was really interested in making sure I saw that part of the journey. And so I began to realize it was kind of a high road trip. It was kind of a high light for me. I love to be in natural beauty to begin with, with a purpose. And so it was right also when I was thinking a lot about life stage being in sync with this particular stage of your business and also possibly of the stage of the business growth of some of your clients. So I had some clients in mind along this way. I do a lot of thinking on the road. You might do that when you're biking. A lot of just kind of in the background, other things going on while you're enjoying the beauty and the freedom of the road.
I think those are genius moments.
I know, and they're actually required for me, and that's part of my high road, which is with the self-renewing stops along the way type thing. So this trip was part retreat, part reflection, part discovery, and part adventure, and all of it was surrounded in beauty. And I love driving to begin with, and I love having a new car. And it was a T-top car rather than a convertible, so I had the convenience of, you know, one side of the T-tops open up above or both, and if the weather wasn't great, you know, closing them. So I'm well into the journey, and I look down, and I see something, beautiful crops and a very large field that I can't reach because I'm on a mountain road, but I'm looking down into this, and I decide I'm going to take a detour time-wise and find a way to track back to the side road that was running alongside those crops down below. And I got there, and I got out of my car and climbed under the fence and had to go all the way out into one of the rows of the crops, and there was row after row after row. And it was the first time in my life I had seen artichokes grow. And I didn't realize what all that involves. They're very, very different on the plant than what we see in the stores. And also some of them were already in bloom and had already should have been harvested and had gone to bloom. and some were ready for harvest and some were getting ready to become harvested, but not yet. So I got to see all the different stages, and it began to remind me of our life stages, how there's a time for everything, and how the artichokes become very expensive flowers if they're not harvested in a timely way, so there's no loss with that crop. And it began to trigger some, like what are the artichokes in my life, and at what stage, would each of them at that time be? And it took me back to tribe, because part of my journey was stopping all through West Texas and in New Mexico in particular, before I got into California, with clients, colleagues, or longtime friends. And I stayed every night along the way. It was going to be a four-week trip. And I stayed every night along the way until the seventh night with colleagues or friends, but only one night because I was, on a journey. And then I would check into a hotel. Because I need some time, completely alone as well. And so I thought, that's, I want somehow to bring this into my business more overtly. And so it was at that time that I realized the high road for me needed to include kind of like a black velvet ribbon that I would be tethered to, because I'm very, like you have shining objects, I'm drawn to rabbit holes to go explore and to kind of like dig down into to find out what else is there off the road, so to speak, on the side roads. And I needed a way to kind of tug and pull me back sometime, back to the high road, to remember what my overall purpose is, at the same time without stopping me from taking off on the adventures and the explorations, because kind of like you, there's gold in them thar hills. And I always, almost always without exception, find some benefit and some advantage into following my curiosity. So I don't know what your high road has become exactly, but I will learn that over time now that we're kind of reconnected and, doing some things. When did you start to discover that there are certain guidelines and principles that are embedded in you that let you know when you're on your high road?
I think it has a lot to do with, it's kind of simple things, really. If I'm at peace with myself and if I feel satisfied overall, when I start to have restless sleep, and I don't know why, or I start to feel kind of like I'm directionless and I don't know why, that's the point where I've got to, like, thank God something in me says, wait a minute, what's going on here? And it is that recheck of like, why are you not at peace? Why are you not satisfied? Why aren't you still curious? I think really the key is when I stop being curious, which hasn't happened very often, but it has occasionally hit me where I'm not interested in anything. And that is so mm-hmm. not me. And I'll recognize that maybe I'm kind of grouch and I'm kind of this mm-hmm. because I've moved myself out of my sweet spot that keeps me energized and excited about life. And it does make me realize if I start getting kind of like that get off my lawn version of Jennifer, then I know that I need to center myself again. And it does take me having to pause and reflect and even talk to a couple of folks, family member or friend or both, and say, I'm in this situation and I don't know why. And sometimes just by me explaining these things, all of a sudden I know, aha, that's where it was. And so I kind of need to talk it out, but it does take me stopping to go, why am I so grouchy, or why is this, why am I feeling unsatisfied, or why am I not curious? Because my natural state is to be enthused about life and curious about life and excited about things. And so when I'm not that way, I know something's off track, and I can always track it back once I begin to question myself. So that's kind of, it's not very scientific, but it's something I've learned over the years to kind of notice that this is happening. That means I need to stop and reflect and figure this out.
Well, there is science under there, because you have a knowledgeable body and you have learned to pay attention to your bodily cues. and your experiences of being in a body. And when the restlessness or the irritation or the grouch, you know, shows up, that is a time that triggers for you exactly what you have learned over time. Is a different road, but it's a path back, so to speak. So, and I think that's also how we kind of feed, because both of us are into and onto trend sensing, you know, keeping kind of a finger to the wind and a thumb to the pulse of what's changing, what's up for people, what's beginning to emerge. And I love emerging edges, and I know that you do too, and we pursue them differently, but very often in tandem. And actually, that's what brought us together in the beginning with the emerging indications of social media from the very, very, very beginning that we were both tracking on for completely different reasons, but it fortunately brought us together multiple times. Our paths started to cross, and a lot of things have, you know, come out of that for both of us since then, differently and together. And that kind of is a natural lead-in also to talk about, you know, how we make time for all of that. We've been talking a lot this month on taking care of self first. So that kind of leads me to the whole concept of a seamless life, S-E-A-M. Capital L-E-S-S. And so there is an emphasis and a focus on ourselves personally and professionally, but at the same time it's a very inclusive focus because we interact with so many different parts of our community. We have real diverse client bases, and we also like to stay ahead rather than catching up with emerging trends, or beyond emerge on the crust of emerging trends. So, like, how do you begin to get the clue and the hint that something is not so seamless with something in your business, for example, that also is impinging on your life? What are the signals for that for you when you begin to want to explore differently?
Well, I have to say that when you said that you and I are trend sensors, I was like, ooh, I kind of like the way that sounds. It sounds better than shiny object syndrome. I think I'm going to add that to my resume or something.
Yeah, you're welcome to steal it. That just came straight out of the ethers.
So, I think what I've discovered, and this is something over time. By the way, if you're just getting started in your business, and you're hearing Sherry and I, who have years of experience in business and kind of have an understanding and a really good feel for what works in our business and what we've seen be successful in others' business, don't feel like you're not there yet. Well, you're not there yet, but by listening to the show and by staying connected with Sherry, you're definitely going to get there. And that's what this is for. This is kind of to help you shortcut that. So for me, it's really just a feel and a vibe and a sense of it. And it is something that, you know, had to come through that trial and terror of figuring out what doesn't work. And I'm hoping that our listeners will shortcut that trial and terror and what doesn't work and you know, get on the fast track or the HOV lane to finding out what does work so that they can live that high road and that seamless life.
Yeah, and I think what we're both encouraging is exploration and to allow yourself adventures and side roads and do a little bit of digging in and finding out if it is true for you. And what I'm advocating is all as breadcrumbs. Always have a way back and put some kind of systematic means together for you as to how you're going to decide not only what you go investigate on a deeper level, but also who you do it with and where you do it. And that kind of we can blend in right here because a lot of people ask me how I decide what it is I'm going to go to because I live in Austin, you live in San Antonio. We both have incredible numbers of opportunities almost every day and night to go to or be a part of something. And how I want to reference right here because we haven't mentioned it, I don't think, before. And it's a lead-in also to collaborations and alliances. I very often like to go to things my colleagues and my friends are putting on themselves, or they're speaking at, or they're on a panel for, or something like that. And there's both a logical and rational strategy underneath that, as well as just pure pleasure. Like, for example, the last two times you've seen me, I've shown up in San Antonio kind of unexpectedly with part of my tribe here, from here, and have wanted to introduce them to some of the wonders in San Antonio. And it turned out you were live stream. I didn't know this. I knew you were presenting at one of them, but I didn't know they were also arranging the live streaming for it. So it kind of gave me a double bonus of being able to see you at work and spend time with you while you were at work, literally, because you were also a presenter. And you were involved in the media of that particular conference today, and introduce you, which is one of my very favorite things, to some of my Austin colleagues who I had come over there with in two cars. We made a trip with five of us, so we brought two cars, and we had a little San Antonio adventure. So that's part of my way I continue to stay in sync with my tribe. In my case, I was introducing them to something new to them that was going on in San Antonio. And we've actually done that twice in the past year, or really the past 6 months. And I got to see you again, too, which was great. And out of that grew this, because one of those two events that we came to, you invited me to do this with you, and you gave me plenty of notice. And I don't know if you remember, but I accepted right away and then thought about it afterward. And
yes.
And it worked out. But it was exactly the ideal way to put it on the table very directly and then, you know, kind of let it brew for a little while. So that was one of the ways I was on a kind of a rabbit trail off the high road, but running tandem with it. And I had that in mind. And that kind of leads me to how and what meetings or what events I just choose to go to. I know you must have a rule of thumb for that, Jennifer. Is there anything you've landed on that you can tell us about how you make your activity choice? And then I'll say more about how I make mine.
You know, I have to say that right now, probably in the last month I began it, and this month I'm really hardcore with it. In December, I'll really be even more strict. I have big plans for what I want to do in 2018, so I am saying no a whole heck of a lot more than I'm saying yes to two things. And right now is the time when everybody wants to get together. And I'm not trying to be a Scrooge, and I will be very selective on what holiday events I go to, but only because I'm being super-duper mama bear protective of my time. Because I also know that if I don't do that, what will happen is I'll holiday myself out to the point where I'm like, gee, I wish I had, you know, done the things that I wanted to do before 2018. So sometimes you have to be selfish with your time. There's a time and a season for you to be out and about and accepting everything under the sun, although I don't recommend that all the time. But there are also times for you to be selfish. And I'm kind of in that selfish mode. I'm teaching an online class. I'm taking an online class. I'm prepping for a live video show I'm going to be doing in 2018. And I'm doing a weekly show. And so there's a lot of stuff that I'm doing and a lot of collaboration and business and ongoing projects. And I enjoy every single one of those things. And I want to do it. So something has to give. And in my mind, I have done a lot of things in the social sphere that I can kind of be selfish in this season, and it's not going to long-term impact, you know, my friendships or my, you know, colleague relationships in any way, shape, or form, because I have a goal and a mission, and it's going to be something that's going to benefit not only myself, but the folks that are part of my circle. So sometimes the answer is no, and sometimes it's yes.
Yeah, I'm going to say this is probably true for all people who either already are or are becoming go-to people, and you are one of those in San Antonio for sure, and well beyond that too. So I have become to some extent that as well in Austin, and I had come off having been that a little bit more nationally in North America too, and then got more local after I moved here in 2002. But my decision is always made with different ways of thinking in mind. One being, I want to go and honor whatever I'm going to with my presence. If I particularly have someone I know who is presenting or is on a panel, for example, because that just adds to the pleasure for me to have that, to reconnect that way. And I almost always like to take people with me or meet people there who would not be going unless I had asked them, you know, to come join me there. And so there's the social aspect of that. There also is somewhat the tribe aspect to it. And also the second component always required is that I am going to learn something new or be able to explore more deeply in something I'm already learning about. And that is kind of fits both of us with our, you know, our tracking trends and also with our loving to spend time on emerging, literally as early adopters of emerging edges too. And, you know, that kind of brings me, I want to close on the, in this, on talking a little bit more, and I've done much deeper, broader work in this than I'll reference today, but there is an art form and a science in the process of creating collaborations and building alliances in time, in a timely way and intelligently for the long haul. And the process I use is really, really rigorous, and you would never know this because it doesn't appear hard. It appears kind of effortless for me to the outside view. I'm told, people often think that I just do this naturally, but I've actually done this with a lot of thought. And so I have some tips and guidelines. If you are a person who likes to create reciprocal type barters or profit sharing collaborations or potentially either profit generating or wisdom generating alliances, because bringing some of us together is always a lot more productive than just individual work, though the individual work is key in the background. And so I actually have 11 kind of working standards and principles that I check out really pretty thoroughly with anyone I'm going to be doing a profit-sharing collaboration with. And I'm just going to highlight a few of those today, but there's more where this comes from, and I sometimes do projects with people just around this particular topic for them as a business, you know, a kind of endeavor, because it costs a lot to make a bad decision when you're making a profit sharing collaboration choice if you don't go about it properly. And also it can lead to betrayal, and it can lead to real disappointment and real financial loss. So I like people to be really thoughtful and careful and rather than casual about this. And I love pilot runs to test the wheels and test the you know, the shared value system before people do major projects together. So the first is competence. Competence, C-O-M-P-E-T-E-N-C-E. I want to have pre-established confidence that I have witnessed versus just assumed or heard about via hearsay of someone's capability that is going to have some responsibility for something really overt and literal on a deliverable, for example, when we create a collaboration. And good intentions don't cut it. So that's the first thing, is I want to have like evidence-based demonstration. And I certainly have that in your case, for example, which was why I could answer just immediately right off the cuff. Yes, I'll do 30 interviews with you in November before I really had any deep down knowledge about what that was going to involve. And I am gradually only discovering what that involved at your end, which is pretty awe-inspiring because I'm doing the heavy parts. You're doing the heavy lifting of the technical in the background. So the first part is I have evidence of the competence there. I also like to initiate that more so than respond to that. I kind of like to handpick the people that are the companies that I do shared profit collaborations with. So the second one is shared values. You and I have spoken about that repeatedly, and I could stop right there in terms of you, because if you just have those two things, you have a pretty good chance of making it work. What shared values specifically means for me is documented shared values. I want to know what they stand for, what they stand on, and what they're not giving up or what they're not shakable, you know, on. And the planning stops right there if the value match does not shake out compatibly for me. I don't really discuss it. That may become some other form of alliance. It definitely can remain a friendship or grow into a friendship, but it's not probably who I'm going to be wanting to do some business collaboration with. The third is operational policies, and that sounds a little kind of stuffy, but we also have to have similarly shared views on how we want to operate, what the guidelines are going to be and the foundation is going to be on how we accommodate to major differences that a lot of times will be discovered over time, but can be discovered faster if you, like, intentionally look for those of their approach. How they want to work the logistical arrangements. In our case, it worked out just perfectly because I'm very comfortable with the phone and with virtual, and there was no real, you know, big need to prearrange anything because we weren't doing video. It didn't have to do with the background. I mean, there was just a whole lot of other stuff that the way you wanted to do this made it very easy for us. And especially in terms of operational policies around their response time, my response time, and what our support practices are. I doubt very many people really think about that when you're going into a collaboration, but like in the business where we have timelines like you do often, and I have other types of deliverable commitments, we need to both be wanting to honor the same kind of standards and systems. And so that's number three. Number four is that we spend the time to really get clearly understood and identified, like able to be written down, goals, both individual ones and mutual ones, and I have found they're best declared in writing. And this can be done on the phone if they're not local, but is best always ideally done in person if you can, because body language shouts, you know, it doesn't just whisper. And we can learn a lot just by, like, for example, our one live encounter at the earlier this quarter, actually it was in October, where you were going to be over here, and I came to the event that you were going to be part of, and then we both deliberately stayed afterward together. And that meeting, I thought, just went so well because we were both prepared for it. We both wanted it to happen, and we both wanted it to happen in advance of a big rush for after we were going to get going, you know, into this. And so I was very grateful that we had that opportunity. But we also checked out that day, that after that meeting, that we were more clearly understanding each other, and we were identifying some goals. Number five is clear individual roles defined, and what also the access to each of each of us, what resource we're going to be bringing in that's more specialized and unique. In my case, it needed to be content. In your case, you know, you had audio, you had all kinds of logistic arrangements to make and technical and media ones. So I was totally confident about all of that in your hands. You apparently were confident about the content direction that we would be taking. And we both agreed, one of the things we both agreed on style and operational policies is we both knew we wanted some interaction. So let me stop right there. There are actually six more, but I think this gives you a really good overview of the detail in which I approach a collaboration. And this is for shared profit, by the way. A community collaboration is also... Go ahead.
Right. Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I mean, I think one of the fun things about it was that we did discuss it in advance, and then we did have a, we had, you know, phone conversations, emails, texts, and then we had that face-to-face meeting after an event up in Austin. And then we also did a beta show to give ourselves a dry run to get a sense of that timing and that flow and an understanding of how it would work together. And that way we could approach the very first live show with an increased confidence of how it was going to work out. And so having collaborative partners that are willing to pre-do things with you really makes a big difference, because then you can enter into that hard launch phase or something that's a little bit more, you know, serious and planned in a way that both of you feel like you know exactly what's going to happen, how it's going to move forward. It just works really well that way.
Yes, I agree. Well, I can stop right here, and we still have wrap-up to do that's coming, which will also include a little bit of a synopsis of our most recent sessions, another week's worth of sessions that we are completing. So do you have anything to say, too, Jennifer, before we sign out today?
No. What I'd like to say is that tomorrow's our last day, folks. On the 30-day journey. It's not our last day forever, but on our 30-day journey. And so I just am so grateful that we've gotten this far, and I know that our listeners appreciate it. And folks, if you want to keep up with all of this stuff that Sherry's doing, you've got to go to sherrylowry.com. She's the gem. She's the gold. You've got to get to her. Set a reminder for 9:30 a.m. Central every day in the month of November to listen to daily episodes of the Build Your Business Once show.